Welcome to the Broadcast Dialogue Podcast, the show all about the media industry in Canada.
This week on the Broadcast Dialogue Podcast, I have joining me from New York City, Ron Tarrant. You're the new head imaging and sound designer and voice for the Howard Stern Show on Sirius XM in New York City. Great gig. And you're Canadian, so we needed to talk to you. How did you end up in New York City working with Howard Stern?
Oh, God, it's been a long journey to get here. This will be my 10th year in radio. This month is when I first got my first part-time job at a local sports radio station in Calgary. But basically, I kind of did what everyone does and go to after you graduate high school, you kind of go, oh, shit, I need a real job. And that's when I found out that SAIT, it's the Southern Alberta Institute of Technology in Calgary.
Oh, yeah. We know it
they
well.
Offered that. A radio program, and it was, I think, about grade 11 I took, like, the open house. And from that moment on, I was like, wow, this is something I can see myself doing. And, you know, I better be good at it because it was kind of radio or bust. I didn't really have a plan B. So that's kind of how I got into it. And I took the two-year program at SAIT, and I just fell in love with production. I kind of grew up with a music background. So I was in bands recording in studios, and I kind of got to see behind the board and what they were doing. And I really started to kind of dissect more of the production side of things rather than when I first initially got into the program. I thought, you know, I could get the most chicks being on air. That quickly dissolved when I was like, oh, you know what? It's not as fun as I quite thought it was. And I seemed to be much better at the production side. So when I got out of there, I was lucky enough to find a production job just outside of Calgary in Airdrie. And I think I was 19 and I did my practicum there. And after my practicum, they said, you know, why don't you stay on and keep doing what you're doing? And I was there for 2 years. And then the cool thing about Calgary was I didn't really have to leave to a small town like a lot of people do in radio.
Right.
I was able to commute, which was great. It was a far commute. I was in the south side of Calgary, so I drove 100K to work every day. But it made up for, I could still live in the big city. I could still be with my friends and family and still get kind of my small town experience. Which obviously helps you move up the ladder a lot quicker than staying in a large market shuffling papers, just hoping for any opportunity you can at that point.
That's a lot of effort you're outputting there, especially for a much stereotyped generation, the millennials. I got two questions for you. Number one, how did you get so self-motivated? And number two, how did you find radio as compared to the work that you had done in music, and presumably you did a lot of work, you know, in your basement off your laptop? How was that transition? And what about these millennials?
Yeah, I think you bring up a really good point, because there's a lot of people my age in the industry who are still struggling or feel that entitlement to, well, I've been at this station now for 2 years, so where's my big raise and where's my big position? And that was something that was really nailed into my head at a young age when I did attend broadcasting school, is, you know, they had really prepared us, and I had a really great teacher. I got to give a lot of credit to a gentleman by the name of Richard Strobant, and he was the head audio instructor at SAIT. And the first day of classes, he's like, you know, if you're looking for money, get out. There's the door. There's no way you're going to make money in this industry. The second thing is he's going to say, you know, you got to be prepared to do anything, because there's always 30 other people who want this job, and you really got to do everything you can to stand out. And so he nailed that into my head from day one. And, you know, the course was intense. You think going to radio school would be a lot of fun, but you're up at 5 a.m. and you're sleeping at the radio station, doing every job possible, trying to learn how the broadcasting program works. And from a young age on, I wasn't very good at academically at anything else. So when I knew about, you know, how tough radio was going to be, I thought I better jump in with both feet and just learn as much as I can and be the best at what I can, and maybe that's how I'll create my options.
Sounds like they got a boot camp going on over there at SAIT.
I
like it. I like it. So how did you find that, learning in that environment as opposed to working out of the basement and doing whatever you want, whenever you want it?
I kind of did both, to be honest. It was, if I wasn't at school, I was doing a lot of stuff on my own time with laptop and kind of experimenting and making music at home was a big thing for me. So as soon as I started to really learn how to record my own stuff, that's when I would just come home and nerd out for hours at a time. And I would start using my music production skills that I was learning, just kind of self-taught, and everything I had done in the studio with my previous bands, and using that in my radio production. And that's kind of what led me to my next jobs and the climb that I had with Rogers Broadcasting and moving around the country. But I think, from the most part, that was kind of the biggest thing, was just having the grind to sit down and really focus and ask questions. And
yeah, but you know what, Ron? It's also talent, right? This is where preparation and opportunity and talent meet. So the big jump is to go from Calgary to Toronto. How did that come about?
It was, I had a really good run with Rogers, and I was really lucky because there's a few guys in Calgary, David Lloyd and Jesse Simon, who I actually play music with Jesse still today. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness for the internet. It's amazing what you can do with technology. Those two guys kind of really got me going in the imaging world. And from there, I put in about 3 years in Calgary, and it was a rough ride as I was trying to do more and take on more and be that young kid who's just, willing to do whatever it takes to make that next step. And I had, there was a time I almost even left radio because I wasn't getting any opportunities. And I felt like I was just kind of working my ass off with no payoff after 3 years. But all of a sudden, with those guys' guidances, this job came up in Edmonton where they said, hey, we've got a station for you. You got to move to Edmonton. And when you hear that from Calgary, I'm not moving to Edmonton. That's like where people go to die. Like, no way. The Flames fans and the Oilers fans, like, if that's bad enough already. But when this job came up, it was a first full-time imaging position, and it was a top 40 station. And that's when I met Al Ford and all these great programmers, and it was kind of my first real chance to throw my stamp on a station. And when I went to Edmonton, the station wasn't doing so well, but after a few months, it started to get a lot of attention from head office in Toronto going, why is the station not doing so well? Wait a second, we kind of like the imaging. Wow, that's, I was a young guy and I was sleeping at the station. And I think that was the best thing possible because it was getting attention that other stations weren't from the big guys, which really helped in my favor. So when they were checking out the station to kind of maybe find out what was wrong with it, they seemed to like what I was doing for the imaging. And right at that time, a job had come up in Toronto. And because I network a lot, I had been knocking on doors and making contacts. And I can't stress that enough to everyone these days about how important that is to show your work to other people and show how your growth and potential is coming along.
So important, yeah.
I think that led to me getting the call to Toronto. So I was only in Edmonton for 9 months as a full-time imaging producer, and then I got the call to come to Toronto and be the little guy in the big pond. And from there, that opened up even more doors and led me to New York City after that. So that's kind of the long story short, if you will, about making it to Toronto, but all 7 years with Rogers.
Well, Toronto is a great stepping stone to New York, but we often think of Toronto as our New York. And when you make it there, you pretty much can indeed make it anywhere, including New York. Did you have New York on your mind or the U.S. at all? Or was it just one of those things that just popped up?
I did. I think that's everyone's dream. It's, I would have done anything to live and work in New York City, 5 or 6 years ago, and everyone kind of talks about it. And wouldn't that be so cool? But there's so much stuff that goes with it, and A, getting a job, B, getting noticed, because frankly, Canadian radio just isn't on the same playing field as American. And with that, then you got to get a visa to come down here. Like, they really make it a pain in the ass. So it was always a pipe dream for me, and one day, wouldn't that be so cool? And I had only ever known one other guy two other guys who have ever been able to make it from Canada to the U.S. to go work at big stations. Mm-hmm. And that was Trevor Shand at K-Rock Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And my good friend now, Dom Nero, here at Hot 97 New York. And that was about 10 years ago, 11 years ago for both those guys, when radio was more in the heyday. and they were willing to spend the money on getting a guy in to do a job and pay for all the legal processes with the lawyers and visas. Yeah. So nowadays, as you know, radio is so scaled back, they'll do anything just to, you know, save a guy from even getting moving costs. So I really thought it was kind of out of the question. But when this job came up and I got the call, it was pretty surreal. And I didn't really get too excited to the end because the whole job kind of hindered on whether or not I could get this working visa. Right. So even though this was happening, I couldn't tell anyone, and the process was...
I've been there, my friend. I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Definitely like, been there. Okay. Because you can't tip your hand to the place you're working, especially if you don't have everything all lined up. And it is such an ordeal and a process. I can only imagine what it's like now in the post 9/11 world. It's crazy. But when Howard speaks, you know, the curtains open and things happen. So you say you were you recruited, or did you chase it?
Yeah, it was the initial kind of call. It was very kind of a secretive thing because they were replacing the guy who had been doing Howard for 10 years. So there was one guy, and I knew this guy, and he kind of let me in and said, "Hey, man, this thing might be happening. You know, we'd love to talk further." Of course, you can't tell anyone about this. And meanwhile, I'm like, oh, yeah, right. Like, they're going to, you know, fling the cash for a guy to come from Canada. And it's so easy to hire an American over me. I didn't really think too much of it in the early stages. So they had said, you know, you're on the radar. We like your demo and everything like that. Would you be willing to go the next step and really try out for the job? And that includes, you know, making custom stuff for Howard. And we've kind of got you on the short list. But, you know, why don't we go from here? And so that was kind of the next stepping stone, and that's when I had gotten the call after I made a few demos from a couple of the guys in the Stern world. I can't really mention too many names from pulling behind the curtain too much, but from there it was kind of, okay, we like your stuff. Why don't you come down and meet Howard and meet the guys, and let's see if you want to work here and if we want you to work here. And so it was just before Christmas time. I was flying down secretly. In between my jobs, and I was going to Calgary to visit my family just a few days before Christmas. And that's when the Stern guys called and said, you know, can you come down? So I was trying to juggle all my Toronto stuff, traveling, and then being prepared for this while making demos at nighttime for Stern. And it was probably the craziest time of my life. And meanwhile, the only person I could tell was like my mom and dad and my girlfriend what was going on. So
it's quite a trip, isn't it? Making the trip down Avenue of the Stars and arriving at the building and going through the lobby and coming out onto the Sirius XM floor and seeing the operation. What was it like for you?
Yeah, I mean, that's you pretty much has nailed it on the head. It's every kid's dream, I think, who gets into radio to even walk in Howard's studio, never mind the possibility of maybe working there. And at this point, it was still a very big possibility of what if, or, you know, are they just, how many other guys have they flown down to do this? Your mind just kind of starts wondering.
Sure.
And at that point, what I know now is funny because I'd known I'd already kind of had the job at that point. But I was scared shitless, to be honest. It was kind of one of those very surreal moments of, could this be happening? And try not to get too excited. And everything that kind of goes with it. It's very, crazy to just see how a New York operation, compares to what we do in Canada and what we think of it in Canada. As you said, the, you know, being in Toronto, I thought was pretty darn cool a few years ago. And then when you see this next level of stuff, it really kind of puts things back into perspective of just how big US radio is and someone like Howard.
Right. There's no question. I mean, Howard is probably the most listened to personality of all time, really. I mean, you can't get any bigger. And when you arrive at that operation, it's clear that you've kind of arrived at the North American pinnacle for the radio business. Now, you know, my observation has always been that Canadian radio is very, very high on the quality scale. But once you step into that US world, it's the depth of it and the scale of it, which takes it to another level.
Exactly. And yeah. You make a really good point of that because one thing that was a little bit different for me is if you're familiar in the Canadian market, as an imaging producer, you really only produce, I guess is the easiest way to put it. You usually have a writer at a station who writes the scripts, or if it's a program director, and you usually have an imaging voice who might live in Los Angeles, Chicago, one of the big guys who voices, you know, maybe 100 different stations, and you're kind of working with them on a daily basis. And then you use production libraries for your music and your sound effects and your sound design. So one of the big parts was about coming here for this job is, and I think that's why they hired me, is I had the ability to do all of that kind of stuff myself. So the interesting thing about the Howard world is I have to write all my own scripts. I produce all my own scripts. I make the music all myself. I make all the sound design from scratch. And I voice it. So I really see it from point A to point Z. And I don't think anyone else in Canada really does that.
Well, it's the ultimate in unradio, isn't it? It's the antithesis of what has defined corporate radio.
Exactly. And that was kind of the big thing, is you have to be able to prove that no other American has this kind of ability in order to get the type of visa that I came down on. It's the O-1 visa. So it's
the O-1.
Actors and stuff come in. So it was pretty hard to acquire. But
now, what does a typical day look like for you over there?
It really depends, because there's a lot of split work between the two channels. 101 is very tapes orientated and specials and all that kind of stuff. That's kind of outside the live show, which you hear on the radio. So we could be doing anything from, you know, Celebration of Robin for a whole week, or maybe there's another special of one of the characters on the show, Sour Shoes, or we do the history of Howard Stern. Right. It's kind of like turning on a movie and getting, you know, hours of radio that's accustomed to these teams that are building these shows, which is really cool. And I think that's why Howard's channels are so great, is because we have the manpower to actually be able to host those and put the time and effort into these specials.
Right. And now, of course, as was announced this year, the channels will continue long after Howard has hung up the proverbial headphones. So I reckon that it's probably a pretty big task to make sure that you build all of this for the years to come.
Yeah. I think the contract is something like 10 years. He's on air live for 5 more years. Yeah. Well, I guess almost 4 now. And then the Sirius has the rights to use all the content, and that includes everything from past to video to, I think, everything that's included in the Stern world for the next 10 years. So that's going to be great for, you know, everyone who's working on the shows. You know, we don't have to look at a counter every day going, we're losing our jobs in 4 years, 3 years, 2 years. It's going to live on, which is really great. And there's just so much content to work with, which is awesome.
It's astounding to me that a tape was rolling pretty much all the time for all those years. At least it sounds like that.
Yeah, it really is. Like some of the stuff I go through back in the old tapes, like you can literally find everything, and it's all documented. So if you're looking for like a keyword of something that happened in like 1992, you can pull up the exact thing that you need at that point. It's really amazing that just how they documented it. So I foresee there being a definite museum in the future or something like that.
Well, it is tremendous in terms of the vision that's there to turn that library and that archive into real prescient sort of presentations week in and week out. For instance, you know, if you hear a news story today, likely you can tune in later today and you'll find on one of the channels an interview with the person who's made the news, but from years ago on Howard. And you talk about timely. It's incredible what you and the team have managed to create there.
Yeah, I think the big thing is just keeping one of the big features is Sternthology, which I think you're referring to.
Yeah,
and that's exactly the kind of plan is we want people to be. You know, if Keith Richards is, you know, falling off another coconut tree, they want to bring up that interview, and it kind of creates that buzz again.
Right, topical is the word I was searching for. It just.
Yeah.
And that's what radio really is all about, is that, you know, sure, we've got the live show will carry, you know, obviously the happenings of the day, but the vision to be able to create something where you can use your back body of work to remain topical in, you know, years and years and years later, and to remain entertaining. I mean, that's tremendous. It must be extremely exciting, because I don't think there's a rule book
That's exactly it. And I think that's why the channels, they have so much ability and flexibility to be able to do that, where it's not, you know, usually the PD has a plan for each week, or they're running some sort of ratings promotion. And, you know, unless someone, you know, passes away in the music world, then typically they'll stick to what they plan for the week. And that's the really cool thing, is because there's so many guys in place when these little emergencies happen, or when you need to rearrange stuff, we've got such a great team that is able to put this stuff together at the last minute or rearrange it for the listener. And it's really about, you know, just having the flexibility and plans to give back and do that on the stations, and not have this pre-programmed station where whatever's happening, or it's just another rerun show. Some people think that, but it's really, really carefully crafted out every single day.
Do you get a fair amount of time with Howard?
It depends on weekly and monthly basis. And since I got there, there was quite a few weeks where I didn't even see Howard in the hallways. Mm-hmm. And with his schedule, he's down to 3 days a week now. Yeah. But we definitely do. We definitely have some meetings together. I can't talk about too much what they are involved wise, but he's such a fantastic guy. And the little kid comes out sometimes when I'm in a room and he's, you know, expressing an idea, or, hey, have you guys thought about doing this, where he'll change a scenario. And I mean, we're talking, these are the best guys in the world in the same room doing what they do. And to hear the ideas coming out sometimes with, if we have an idea or a special coming up or whatever the case may be, it's pretty cool just to be in that room, a fly on the wall, and see how it kind of transforms, and Howard's ideas and how he is on the air compared to off. And it's just, the guy is just, it's exciting to go to work every day and just be under him and find out what new idea he has that day.
Yeah, tremendous. And there's a reason that he's had the staying power that he has. He just continues to reinvent and reinvent. One thing that I can see is that the longevity amongst the staffers is huge. I mean, it must be a great experience to join a group like that. But is it tough in any way to walk into such a tight group?
It is. And you bring up a good point, because I think that's something that a lot of people wouldn't think about unless you're in the radio industry or you kind of get how it works moving into a team like that. But as soon as I got there, everyone kind of knew that, you know, I was there for a reason. So they treated me with respect right away, which was great. And it's a big tight-knit family. It's kind of interesting when you hear other channels talk about the Howard guys, because it's a little more segregated from the rest of the SiriusXM world. We have our own kind of headquarters in the compound.
The enclave.
Yeah, one else is really allowed into, so I'm sure most of them hate us. But
I've not heard that. I've just heard about the, you know, you better turn right off the elevator instead of left, you know, that sort of thing. I haven't heard that. But I do know that there probably has to be, for many, many different reasons, a demarcation line between the rest of the operation and Howard's program. And I think they've created that there.
Yeah, that I think that's the best way to put it. It's a giant radio land when you walk in that building, and there's just so much going on that we're one little section of what is it, 150 or 60 channels.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. But I mean, all the staff is just amazing. If you see anyone in the hallways, they're super friendly. It's not like what you would expect with egos and all that. I mean, sure, there's guys that have been there for 25 years, and it's different than, you know, a board op who just started yesterday kind of thing. But I mean, everyone's just such a pro at what they do, and they love going to work every day. And the team, like, I think that's one of the great things, is you don't want a lot of turnover at a radio station, and that's why it's such a great group. And there was only one guy who had done this job before me when Howard got there, and his name is John Kerber, and that guy's like a brother to me, and I used to grow up listening to his stuff. So when I got the call from him saying, hey, do you want to take over for me, that was kind of a dream come true. And I knew at that point that you know, I wasn't going to get there in the first 5 months. If they didn't like me, they're probably going to fire me. I mean, you still have that inclining, but at the same time, it's not like they're going through producer after producer, just grabbing someone's ideas, draining him until he dies, and then grabbing a new guy. And that's what made me feel really good about going there, is knowing what a tight-knit staff they have, and the amount of people, you know, who stay there and are able to handle the pressure and It's worked out really well. So it's made me feel good, especially when you're moving from Canada to a whole nother station. And when you have a good job in Canada, it's nerve-wracking to leave that sometimes, but this was an easy decision when I did get the call, knowing all that.
Yeah, well, it helps if you have a mentor who you can study under and go to for any advice, sage words. You know, it makes all the difference in the world. So how is your hiring there? How is that filtered back through your friends in Canada? What are they asking you?
I think the biggest thing was just how I got into the States, because as it was my dream, I know it's a lot of other producers' dreams where you kind of hit a pinnacle in Canada. And where do you go from there? There's not really any, you know, high paying producing jobs, or if you go into programming, that's kind of a different route than producing. And if you're kind of the production manager of a station, where do you kind of go from there? And that's kind of where most people try to start looking into the States once they are established in Canada. And that's probably what I get asked most about is just the process of how I actually obtained the visa and got into the States, and how a company was willing to kind of to sponsor me to do that. To finish on that note is just how to kind of get noticed in the States. And that's kind of that's been the biggest thing, and that's just goes back to what I keep telling everyone about networking as much as you can, because it's really hard to get noticed when, you know, there's 40 other thousand radio producers in North America alone, it seems like, on most days.
Well, again, it all comes back to the talent, and if you got talent, it'll take you a long way. There's no question about that. Now, tell me about the actual physical experience of living in New York. Where are you living right now?
I'm not too far from the station, so I'm about four blocks from Times Square.
Okay.
And I love it. It's
right on
great.
The island.
Yeah, so it's right, it's just on the west side and kind of the Hell's Kitchen area, so it's a quick 15-minute walk to work, which is great every day.
That's an entertainment in itself, just the walk to work.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to deal with subways except for on the weekends or if you kind of want to go everywhere. But I don't drive here. It's that would just be complete madness. So I'm just a couple blocks away from my buddy Dom, who works at Hot 97. So we get together quite often, and he's been showing me the ropes since I got down here. And it's great. It's the city has so much to offer. And it's cool because you feel like when you're on the streets, in order to live in Manhattan, everyone kind of has to be doing something really cool in their lives because it's so bloody expensive. So that can be very inspiring too. So when you do go out and meet new people, everyone here, I feel like, is doing great things with their life. And that's, you know, really inspiring on a day-to-day basis when you put in a 17-hour workday and you're like, what am I doing here? I'm going to die here. And then you realize everyone else is doing the same thing as you, and you should just be grateful to be here, I think.
Everybody's just hustling.
Hustle, you gotta hustle here.
So what's on the long range forecast for you? Where do you see the career going from here?
Well, I'd like to stay in New York if they'll have me, as long as I can. But I mean, it's mainly just focusing, and I really want to do something great with Howard. And if he does decide to retire in 4 years or so, I mean, that's going to be quite the ride retiring. I'm sure it'll be like Oprah, where everyone's kind of tuning in to see what happens in the last few years, even more so than the number of people we have right now.
Right.
So I just want to learn as much as I can from Howard and experiment as much as I can, and just make some cool radio, because the opportunity to do the production that I'm doing, it's never going to be the same as what I'm doing for Howard. So when this ride's over, it's going to be all the memories that I'm keeping. So I'm looking to make some of those while I'm here and enjoy life in New York City and just keep growing, basically.
Ron, it's such a pleasure to talk to a guy who has it all together, especially with only 10 years under your belt, to be this focused, to have achieved this much, and to be so centered and quite frankly, bullshit free. It's just really refreshing, and I wish you nothing but the best.
Oh, well, thank you, Sean. I mean, I don't know about the bullshit free part, but
well, I've got a pretty good detection unit, and I can tell you, you're pretty down to earth, my friend.
Well, thank you, Sean. I really appreciate you touching base, and it's great to finally talk to you. And it's funny, I grew up reading broadcast dialogue. Every time I was in the radio station in Airdrie, I would always steal one and find out where everyone was moving in the country, and I was reading all the articles, and I'm just a big radio nerd fan, so it's so cool that you guys have taken this on to the next chapter and opened it up with a podcast. So I think that's really great, and it really gives back to the radio community.
Thanks very much. You know, that makes two of us. Ron Tarrant is the head imaging and sound designer and voice of the Howard Stern Show on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, based in New York City. Farewell, my friend.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much, Sean.
Thanks for listening to Broadcast Dialogue. For more information about the podcast or to receive exclusive access to our weekly briefing about the Canadian media industry, visit us at broadcastdialogue.com. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, connect with us on LinkedIn, and follow us on Twitter and SoundCloud.